Live from KCRW Santa Barbara, I'm Jonathan Bastian, and welcome to the second debate for California's 24th Congressional District. After 20 years of leadership from Congresswoman Lois Capps and her late husband Walter Capps, voters across Santa Barbara and the Central Coast will be electing a new representative. Last week, we heard from Democrats Salud Carbajal, Helene Schneider, and William Ostrander, and from Republicans Katja Ouachadjian and Justin Fareed. Today, we'll hear from three more candidates who are live in the studio with us today. They include Democrat Benjamin Lucas, Independent Steve Isaacson, and Republican Matt Kokkonen. Independent John Ubersax declined our invitation. At the end of the hour, we'll wrap up both debates by talking with local political journalist Jerry Roberts. Now let's get to the rules of tonight's debate. There will be a mixture of questions directed to all the candidates and to specific candidates. They'll be given 90 seconds to answer the question. If a candidate is mentioned in an answer, he will have 30 seconds to respond. Our goal is to provide equal time to all of the candidates. That being said, thank you all for joining us, and let's begin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a question to all the candidates, beginning with Mr. Lucas. This winter's El Nino storms did not bring the necessary amount of rain to lift Southern California from a drought. Following Governor Brown's orders, cities like Santa Barbara continue to cut their water use. However, it's been estimated that 80% of water in the state goes toward agriculture. So therefore, should we be asking farmers and not necessarily cities in the 24th District to change their practices? And if so, how? Mr. Lucas.
I absolutely believe there should be a moratorium on drilling in the Central Valley. Right now, we have a two-year waiting list just for drills. They're drilling down 1,500 feet, hitting aquifers that are a million-year-old water sources. Takes 100 years for one drop of water to replenish that source. I think our best solution, it's not desal. We're energy deprived, and we pay 35% more for electricity in our district than any other district right now or any other place in the United States. Our gas is more, our oil's more, everything is here is more expensive on resources. Our only hope for water, I think, is to bring a 4-foot pipeline from Lake Superior. They're bringing a 3-foot right now down into lower Arizona, minimal cost. I want to bring it across the Transcontinental Highway, drop it into Lake Mead, use it as a head source, a head tank for the reservoir there, and we can service New Mexico, Arizona, and California at the same time. Those water distribution rights we're talking about from the Colorado River were established many years ago, and it services the whole West. So we just can't think about California in the drought. It just doesn't serve us when we're so close to those other sources and other
states.
But
would this pipeline you're suggesting, would this affect farmers? Does this mean they would not have to change the way they use water right now?
Eventually. I calculate it would take about 4 years to fill that source, to replenish it. And then they could go back to standard, but then a moratorium on drilling. And they're selling their water rights downstream anyway. It's almost like 1930 in Chinatown again.
Okay, thank you. Steve Isaacson.
Well, there's no doubt we're in a drought. Hopefully it gets over soon, but it could go on for 10 years as well known during the last century. Going back several centuries, many centuries, it's lasted as long as 250 years drought in the area. So the drought can continue for some time. We can't sit there and hope next year is going to be a rainy year. Yes, I think a lot of the water that we have on the Central Coast has been going to agriculture, and I've seen agriculture growing in recent years. Nothing wrong with that. It's a big business. It serves us all. But perhaps the residents here have for many years been required to conserve, drip irrigation, what have you, put in a rock garden. The farmers should be able to do the same, is use better techniques for watering, reduce their water use. They should be required to. Otherwise, we'll continue to have water shortages, and at some point, somebody's got to move to a different part of the state where there's more water, either the farmers or the people, and abandon the cities. So, yes, I absolutely think the farmers need to also conserve water, as the residents have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kokkonen.
Indeed, we are in a drought, as everybody knows, and California historically has been a very dry area. And it is true, I believe, that the farmers do need to make adjustments, and many of them are already at this point. Because of the drought, many of the ranches and tree farms there pulling out the trees because the trees have aged. And farmers are smart people also. They realize what they have to do. So they may have to be changing the type of plants that are going down in the, what they're planting and different trees and for different fruits. They will adjust to that. I do believe, however, that we should locally here utilize desal, and especially San Luis Obispo, where we already have a power plant, the Diablo Canyon. They have ample power there to so that we can use the desal, what they have, the plant they have there as well. And I believe that Santa Barbara should be also looking at that and implement that. One of the things we have not done in the state is build new reservoirs, and we absolutely need to do that. We've been taxed on that, but the money has not been used for that. It's been going towards the general fund, and I think that's absolutely wrong. So everybody has to tighten up, including the ranchers and farmers. They do have to tighten up as well, and utilize modern techniques in their water allocations.
Thank you. We'll now move to questions to individual candidates. Steve Isaacson, you have no history of governmental leadership. You have a background in electrical and computer engineering. What makes you confident that you have the experience and ability to be an effective congressman?
Einstein once said, "You're not going to solve the problems we have by using the same kind of thinking you used to create the problems originally." We have major problems coming up in Congress in the coming years. Skyrocketing debt will continue to skyrocket. Interest on those debts are going to exceed the military budget in just a few years, half the discretionary budget. Different thinking is needed in Congress. My background is in the sciences, admittedly. Physics, computer science. I got my PhD here from UCSB. I'm a problem solver. I can recognize problems and I can come up with methods to solve them. I can work with, I'm a management position where I work, and I learn to mentor others and work with others. This is my background that I'll use in Congress. There are many other people in Congress, not necessarily in the leadership positions, that want to do good for the people. It's seeking them out and working with them that will allow me to work effectively in Congress. Thank you.
Benjamin Lucas, similarly, in your biography, you say that you've worked as a nuclear operator at Three Mile Island and also as a spokesperson for Playboy Enterprises, but you don't have any direct political experience or a history of governmental leadership. So what do you say to those who do not believe that you're qualified to be a congressman?
I do have a political history. I did run for District 4 City Council in Los Angeles twice against John Ferraro, a 30-year city president. I'm not afraid to take on the odds. I wanted the experience back then. I was probably Justin's age, 27, and I thought I would try to learn how to run a campaign and go up against a formidable opponent. And the things that I've done in my life always were working with group people. As a nuclear operator, you're a team that runs an entire plant. And in my lifetime, what I've learned is there's always a goal in mind. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end to a project. And you go in, you form consensus, you make friends, you make alliances, and you have to persuade 435 people, 434 people besides myself in Congress. You have to make a consensus to get what you want done. You have to have original ideas. And if you look back through the history and Google my name, and with Hugh Hefner and Harrison Ford and Peter Morton and people like that, you'll cross-reference me from working with these people, Christy Hefner directly. And I was always brought into my positions to be a problem solver. That's what I do. And I have something out called the Lucas Solution. You can go to thelucassolution.com and reference it during this debate.
Thank you. Let's move on to a topic that I think some of our listeners might find quite interesting right now. This question is from Matt Kokkonen. We're getting closer and closer to the general election. And if Donald Trump is the Republican nominee for president, which it appears he will you support him in the general election? I ask because you are the Republican at the table today.
I appreciate the question. Thank you very much. Indeed, I will support him because I know certainly, we know with certainty what the Democrats stand for. And Mr. Trump has experience in a lot of business areas, and I think that's very valuable. He's a Republican, and I believe that he has the same goals in mind as what I want to pursue, which is independence, which is limited government, personal responsibility, and we want to make sure that we address the immigration issue, and he definitely wants to do that, and I do too. And so we have a lot of the same goals, both of us do.
Let me ask you about that, because he's suggesting in his first 100 days he wants to build a wall with Mexico, and he keeps saying he would like the Mexicans or the president to pay for it. Is that something you would support as well, the wall proposal?
Well, that's one of the solutions, and absolutely I would be in favor of that. You know, people are sick and tired of the immigration problem being kicked back and forth and never coming up with a solution. And he's a person who's willing to take it on, and so am I. You know, if people are here illegally, what part of illegal don't you understand? That's a question. And he's willing to address that, and I'm willing to address that. And we're going the same direction. Absolutely, I'll be supporting him on those issues. And I'm a businessman. He's a businessman. So even on the economic problems, we are looking at the same goals.
Thank you. This is Mr. Lucas, you'd like to respond?
I'd just like to address the point of crossing the border being illegal. If you really look it up on the internet, it's not illegal. It's a misdemeanor. It's not a felony for the first time crossing. To prosecute a misdemeanor, you have to see the act and the crime in commission. So you would have to see that person crossing the border. That's why we have Border Patrol. Once they're in the United States, they have to commit a felony or a heinous act to be deported. It's sort of don't ask, don't tell. So,
well, let's get right to this subject then. This is a general question for all the candidates, and we'll begin with Mr. Isaacson. For example, in March, ICE officials ordered Bonita Packing Company in Santa Maria to fire hundreds of farm workers because of their immigration status. It's been estimated that the vast majority of farm workers in Santa Barbara are undocumented. At the same time, as many of you know, this comes when there is a 25% labor shortage across the district. So, to continue with our conversation here, do you believe that we should offer these workers a path to citizenship, Mr. Isaacson?
Well, for the specific question, absolutely. Most of them have been here for a very long time. They have family here. They've integrated themselves into the community. It's time to take them out of the shadows and not be abused. They need to be treated with respect, and if they want to stay here, then they should have a path to some legal status. Now, as far as companies that hire illegals, if they know they're hiring illegals, then it's probably because they don't want to pay as much. It may not be forwarding the taxes. I don't know in these cases specifically what it is. Those cases I would definitely prosecute for not obeying the laws themselves. But these workers have been here, and they're here because we want the labor, but we're not necessarily willing to pay what it would take to hire legal citizens. No, if you have a labor shortage, it's probably because you're not willing to pay what it takes to get the workers. Mm-hmm. If you raise salaries, the workers would come. But the specific question, should they have a path to some legal status, which could include citizenship? Yes, I think they should. Okay. They need to be treated with respect.
Mr. Kokanen, to you, again, specifically for the workers in this district, would you provide them with a path to citizenship?
No, I would not. I think it's a matter of understanding what's happening here. We have an invasion of aliens coming to our country, and to say that they should have a special way of getting here is disrespectful to all of us who have come here legally and done it right. I'm an immigrant from Finland. I was born in Finland at age of 13. My father died. I put in for my visa at age 16. I got my visa. I left Finland by myself, didn't know anybody in New York. I had one suitcase, and I made it. And I'm thankful to America for having accepted me and other immigrants. But I did it legally. And millions of people have done it that way. And that's the way it should be done. The question of farm workers, yes, we need to come up with solutions such as modernizing the Braceros program. That program worked well. But people have to come here legally. And this question is not separate from the refugee problems that we're facing. And I wanted to point out that I absolutely oppose what one of my other Republican opponents has advocated, Mr. Shajian, our assemblyman. He voted to give the driver's licenses to the illegals. That's atrocious in my judgment. And everybody says, no, we don't want that. And he also voted to get legislation to give those who are here illegally already, to give them a work permit.
Yeah.
Why? That's not right. Either you do it illegally or don't do it. But we have to do. We have to know who's here, and we got to do it legally.
But this issue of a labor shortage, that does not worry you, and you really think this Porcaro program will take the place of the workers that could potentially be kicked out of the district?
You know, we have to focus on the employers, and they need to start using the E-Verify program. And if they can't document the fact that the person is here legally, they should have a penalty for that. And maybe the best penalty would be that the wages they pay these people are not going to be tax deductible, for example. Okay. So the people will deport themselves, because if there's no jobs for them here. Now, then you say the products will go up in cost. That's true. Lettuce will go up. However, the cost of the produce going up is going to be less than what the social costs and taxes we pay now for the illegals.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lucas, again, we're referring to this labor shortage and the fact that we need workers, and there are many here undocumented. Do you support a path to citizenship?
Trying to deport an unseen group of people in 50 states seems like an impossible task to me, even for the most optimistic person. What we have to do is, like I said, change crossing the border to a felony, so then it's enforceable by local and state jurisdiction, puts immigration back into those people's hands where you can enforce it. I think by going, and you have 90 days to go register if you're undocumented. You give a DNA sample, you give a fingerprint, you give a place of residence, you go through the immigration status established over a 7-year criterion, and you're a legal citizen. If you don't go register, you now will be found eventually. It also gives gang-infested areas the opportunity to weed out their own neighborhoods. Because right now, a gun violation's dropped immediately. They don't want to go through the federal penal system. These criminals get back out, go home, and whoever dropped the dime on them, they're going to kill them. So by those people not registering, if they are illegal, you separate the wheat from the chaff, and you take the people who won't sign up and you deport them. You'll eventually find them, and you let the other immigrants and undocumented people. They could be from Germany, Chile. We all think Mexico. There's Australians. There's English people. There's a lot of undocumented workers in this country besides, you know, from the South. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to special live debate for the 24th Congressional District at KCRW Santa Barbara. I'm Jonathan Bastian. We're live with three candidates, Democrat Benjamin Lucas, Independent Steve Isaacson, and Republican Matt Kokkonen. This is a series of direct questions to individual candidates. Mr. Kokkonen, you are a conservative Republican running in a politically split district. Additionally, young voters attending schools like UCSB and Cal Poly tend to be socially liberal. How do you appeal to those who do not fit within your conservative base, who may support things like gay marriage, abortion rights, or granting legal status to immigrants?
Well, the immigration issue we touched on earlier already, and you know, a candidate will never appeal to 100% of the voters. And even Ronald Reagan said, you know, if you get 70% from a legislator agreement with on 70% of issues, then you're doing very well. Many people like my conservative stand on the Constitution, on rule of law, on personal responsibility and economic benefits, and they certainly are not against those. And many of them say, well, the social issues are a side issue. I do want to point out something specifically for the young people. I'm in favor of making sure of sponsoring legislation that says there's no income taxes at all for people under age 25. The reason I said that, and I've stated that earlier already, is that I want to get these young people started on their careers, getting families going, getting into a business, and paying off maybe student loans. And when they get a taste of not having to pay taxes, they will think twice when they hit the older age, when they hit 26 or 25, and then all of a sudden they have to start paying taxes. Then it'll become real to them. What in the world are the taxes going to? So that's a very unique perspective. No income taxes for people under age 25 on earned income. And I think it'll fly very well. In fact, many people have said that's a very unique, very, very promising thing. They like that. They like me.
Thank you, Mr. Kokanen. Benjamin Lucas, you're running as a Democrat, but have described yourself as a Reagan Democrat, which implies maintaining certain Republican beliefs. Can you tell me exactly what issues you agree with, where you agree with Republicans on?
Well, to start with the term, I'm for social freedoms, social liberties, but I'm not for social welfare. That's where I differ from the Democrats. And as a Republican, I support nuclear power. I support the Keystone Pipeline. I support offshore oil well drilling.
And what aspects of social welfare are you describing exactly?
Well, the undocumented people are taking that portion of our welfare. If we document them, they'll be off the welfare rolls of any kind of support, and they'll be taxpaying citizens overnight. It's as simple as that. That's where it's going. It's going through Medicare fraud. It's going through all the fraud systems. I was told by a county employee that she was getting so upset, she was getting pressure from above to issue benefits to undocumented people as long as they signed a paper saying they were here and acknowledged they're here, but they aren't citizens. Mm-hmm. Then they'll get the benefits. These people don't want to sign it. They're being forced to sign it. They're being given the benefits. It's coming from the top down. It's not coming from the bottom up.
Okay, what about other social programs? What about food stamps? What about unemployment insurance? Do you support those?
Food stamps come from the fact that we don't have a $15 an hour minimum wage. When you have Walmart and these stores supporting that, they know you're going to be eligible for food stamps. They plan their salary base around knowing that the government will take the slack, and that's what's happening around the country, especially in the southern states.
Okay, well, we're going to get to minimum wage later, so you'll all have a chance to discuss that, as I know many of you would like to. This question is for Steve Isaacson. You are running as an independent, which gives you more freedom to take both conservative and liberal standpoints. Give us an example of two issues you stand behind that a party politician would have trouble justifying. In other words, what separates you from a mainstream Republican or a Democrat?
The problem is I'm all over the board. I'm an independent because I don't...
Give us some examples on both sides.
On both sides, I'm definitely a fiscal conservative. I believe we should have a balanced budget. That's actually the only conclusion I can come to based upon what the fiscal situation is going to be in 6 years. $25 trillion debt and over $600 billion in interest payments on that debt. So not that the Republicans have ever tried to implement a balanced budget, but that is a Republican philosophy, is a balanced budget. Meanwhile, I would tend to give the immigrants, those that have integrated themselves into the neighborhoods like any other citizen, I would tend to give them a path to citizenship, as I discussed earlier. I'm very much for green power. We've got lots of solar reserves here in the eastern part of the district. That would tend to be a Democratic issue more than a Republican issue. I believe in climate change. Republicans would be horrified by that.
A quick question. You've talked about balancing the budget. Where would you make cuts then in terms of spending to balance the budget?
Cuts are extremely tough because there are only four programs that really have enough money in them to be significant. That would be the military, Social Security.
Would you make military cuts?
I would be very hesitant because I don't want to cut back on the military, but I think they can be more wise with their money at times. And they've got various programs right now to spend wiser, as they say. And I think they can spend less and get the same job done in many cases. Okay. And in those areas, I would be a little more conservative.
Thank you. This is a general question to something I just alluded to briefly. Governor Brown was recently able to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which will be phased in over the next 6 years. By 2022, it should be fully in place. Do you support the measure, which is designed to help lift working class Americans? Mr. Kokanen.
I do not. First of all, I don't think government should be involved in managing the salaries, either the top salaries or the lower salaries at any level. There are unintended consequences for for example, California residents because of the California law. Most people don't realize that the exempt employees who tend to be the who are the salaried and tend to be the managerial people, their salary has to be twice that of a person being paid a minimum wage. So when the minimum wage hits $15 an hour, then all of a sudden these middle managers or the exempt employees, their salary has to be about $62,000 a year. I've already had clients come to me and say that they're going to be cutting these people off salary and putting them on an hourly basis and cutting their hours. So these type of things we don't even think about usually. So I do not support that because the jobs that are paid minimum jobs, minimum wage jobs, they're usually the starter jobs. They're not the career jobs, and they're stepping stones for young people, and that's been the tradition, and it will be the same thing going forward. If we don't raise the jobs, we'll actually have much more. If we don't raise the minimum wage, we'll actually have more people employed. Mm-hmm. But by increasing the wages, we'll be cutting out a lot of young people's employment training as well as incomes.
Well, people really are, though, talking right now about this issue of income inequality and how the top 1% are making a lot of money right now compared to the bottom. I mean, so what would you propose? If not the minimum wage, then what? Would you make any policy changes?
How many people do you know that have employed? How many poor people do you know who have employed anybody? The rich people are the ones that employ. I don't resent anybody who makes more money than I do. I think it's good for everybody. I have clients. I have clients because they need my services. You have clients. The radio station might be a well-to-do corporation. If they weren't making money, they wouldn't be hiring you. I don't resent that at all. I think it's a blessing to our society if people make a lot of money.
Thank you. Steve Isaacson, the question of minimum wage, do you support it?
I do support the rise in the minimum wage. An example on the national level is it's about $7.25 right now. Back in 97, I believe, the minimum wage was $5.15 an hour, I believe. And if you just look, based on cost of living adjusted, you could easily justify $10 an hour on the national level. Basically, the minimum wage has not kept up with the cost of living. And so what you're saying is somebody back then was a lot better off than today living on minimum wage. So the same thing has happened at the state level, raising it from $10 an hour up to $15 an hour, step at a time. I fully support because some area, well, Santa Barbara, you can barely I doubt you can live on $15 an hour here in Santa Barbara. There are areas that absolutely require a higher minimum wage. Many states throughout the nation have always had minimum wages much higher than the national level. I am glad that they did step it up slowly. Some people wanted just a single step. That would cause some imbalances in inflation and such. So the gentle push into it is appropriate. But yes, I support the increase.
Thank you, Mr. Isaacson. Benjamin Lucas.
Yes, I support the increase, and I'll tell you why. I mean, it's been proven that if you raise the standard of living of your employee, you're going to have a more loyal employee. They won't be going to a secondary job. They won't be as tired. They'll be more efficient. They'll be more loyal to your cause as a company. It's been proven, I believe in Oregon, where they raised the price, that the standard of living went up, the housing went up, the home cost went up, but so banks value what they're going to loan you in that community on your house based to the income. So the real estate will never grow in value, or nothing will ever grow in value in these areas that are limited to these low paying jobs. If you go to Michigan and Arkansas, of course, $15 sounds exorbitant to these people. And a lot of people herd to those areas for cheap living. But when you realize there's no employment there, cheap living, then it goes back to the government welfare programs we were talking about. And they're herding to these areas where they can receive the benefits because they have no employment. It's a bad situation. I believe $15 an hour will bring the standard of living up. I support it. I think the rate that Governor Brown set for the growth of to $15 is adequate. And I think the country should follow the model. I think it will bring up our standard of living, and if we don't have an immigration problem and everything works together and you start changing these things, it will benefit the country.
Thank you. This is a series of questions for individual candidates, beginning with Mr. Kokkonen, and we're going to return to immigration here. When asked about the shootings at San Bernardino and the need for gun control reform, you said, quote, "San Bernardino points out the laxness in our policy admitting radical Islamic refugees," unquote. So if elected, would you go as far as banning all people of Islamic faith entry into the United States, which is certainly something that Mr. Trump is talking about, who you said you would support in the general election?
I'd like to make a very important distinction, okay, in fact, to what you stated. Would I stop people of the Islamic faith from coming here? That's a misunderstanding. Islam is not only a faith. I would not keep anybody out of here because of the faith they believe in and subscribe to. Islam is a totalitarian system of economic lifestyle, of Sharia law, political and legal. It's a political legal system. It's a totalitarian system. Every part of Sharia law is against our constitution, and on that basis, I would keep them out.
All of those of Islamic faith are of Sharia law, though.
No, but there's only one. If they believe in the Quran and what the Quran says, there is only one Quran, by the way. There's not a liberal one or a conservative one or a more lax one. The Quran is a Bible, is the book which the Sharia is based on, and that tells the Islamists to kill the people who are infidels, which is you and I. Anybody who doesn't believe in Allah and his prophet Muhammad is an infidel. So we have to understand that it's a very serious situation, and I would ban people if we don't know who they are, especially the ones that come from terrorist-controlled areas. We have to know who they are before we come them.
Okay, so I just want to clarify. If somebody is applying and they do say they practice Islam, would you let them into the country or not?
I would find out who they are. We have to vet them. The problem is that the CIA director and FBI director says we don't know who they are. They can't vet them. If they can't vet them, then they should absolutely not come here. I think one of the responsibilities of government is to keep its people safe, and I'm unwilling to let people here who too many of them are terrorists.
Okay.
In fact, I'd like to point out that the Syrian ambassador to India, right after the Paris attacks, he was asked the question, well, how many of these people who are moving to Europe, how many of them are jihadists? It's his statement. He said 20% are jihadists.
Okay.
Well, and that's a huge percentage.
Okay, we'll move on from them. Steve Isaacson, you seem to have mixed thoughts on whether or not Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant should be relicensed in 10 years. While you say it offers employment for 1,400 people in the district, you've also cited accidents like Fukushima and Three Mile Island. Will you support continuing its operation? Why or why not?
If it's thoroughly vetted, so to speak, but the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will hold hearings. If those hearings are done thoroughly, I would support its relicensing. If it looks like a whitewash, that's another matter, because accidents do happen. If it's renewed this time, and that's a big if, because I'm even certain PG&E really wants it relicensed, but that will be seen in a few years. If it is, I don't doubt for a moment that it will not 20 years later be renewed. And by that time, enough of it will have worn out that I don't think it will be safe to continue operating. And any safety review would be a whitewash at that point. Yes, it provides a baseline power, though. 20% of PG&E's power comes from the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. You shut that off in 10 years, then we're going to go to fossil fuel-fired plants. That's just going to contribute to climate change. I think the risks there are far greater than a properly relicensed nuclear plant would be. The jobs, yeah, they're nice, but I think we can replace them with the green power from the eastern part of the district, and I think that would work out well, too, in the long run.
Okay.
But we need more research and infrastructure to get that in place.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to education, a question for Benjamin Lucas. Would you like to respond?
Yes, he had mentioned Three Mile Island, I happened to work there as a nuclear operator and ran the systems that actually cleaned that island up. To tell you the benefits of what we've discovered from the first nuclear accident in the United States, we wouldn't be in deep space today if we didn't have the accident. I know it sounds bizarre and iconic, but the radiation was breaking our satellites apart. We now had a source of radiation that we contained in vessels, and NASA, Japan, China bought our vessels. They tested their metal alloys in there, and that's where these metal alloys came from that we're in deep space with. Okay. I just wanted to mention, for every bad side of something, good arises also.
Sure. Well, let's move now to education. When asked about whether or not the federal government needs to help make college more affordable, you said the government already provides plenty of grants and scholarships. Does that mean you would not support a plan to subsidize tuition or go as far as to make public universities tuition free?
I actually have three children, all entering the college level. My daughter received a $50,000 scholarship for grades and academic achievement at Loyola Marymount. My son is on a full ride at Northridge he's in his second year of mechanical engineer. He had won worlds in robotics and competed at that level, and they applied grants and all kinds of things. I talked to students all over the Central Valley, and they seem to think there's accessible. I really don't believe coming out of school with $30,000 in debt undergraduate is that great.
And that is the average now. That's what they say, if not more. Right.
Correct. And I ask, and that is about the average. And $8,000 a year for room, board, school, all the things you receive as an education, that's quite amazing. I look forward to funding postgraduate courses. I would offer free tuition from the government for doctorials and things like that.
But like a Bernie Sanders proposal, he would like to make public universities tuition free. Do you support that?
I support Bernie Sanders, but not on this subject. I believe that if you've attended college, I think Catherine probably came out pretty recently, and I believe that you can't do it free. There's not enough classes. You can't get a class now as it is. My kids have to beg for their classes sometimes to get into a class. I don't know how making it free would make it more accessible.
I'd like to give the rest of you an opportunity to answer this. Mr. Kokono, do you believe we need to work on this issue that students have debt of $30,000? How would you change this, if at all?
Well, picking up on an earlier comment, my daughter went to the Air Force Academy, and she got her education paid for that way. And after that, she attended medical school, and that was all at Georgetown University, and that was also paid. Now, she paid back she had to put in nine years of active duty, which she did as an emergency room doctor and an officer. One of the problems we have here is that the secondary education does not necessarily and adequately prepare the students to go to college, and they spend a lot of time in remedial classes, and that impacts the colleges, and they can't get the proper classes, and so their college years, instead of being 4 years in college, they might be 5 or 6 years. At Cal Poly, 5 years is very common. So a lot of people have to go through this extra step because the high schools, their education hasn't been good enough in high schools. But there's a responsibility that all students have of selecting the majors they have. If you're going to be in social sciences, you might not be able to make enough money to pay your loan. So there's the responsibility for students, and ultimately they are responsible for the money that they borrow, and we should not pay it off for them. I don't believe we should, because that is also irresponsible on society's part just to let that go by. Could I address one issue that was mentioned about the jobs that could be replaced at Diablo Canyon by the solar panels on the eastern side?
You have 30 seconds, yes.
Yeah, thank you. That's a pipe dream, because the solar panels don't take a lot of maintenance jobs, or that's the only kind of jobs basically there are in some engineering, but there are hundreds of people at Diablo Canyon and the solar farms on the eastern side of our county in San Luis Obispo, they will never come up with the same number of employees.
Okay. Steve Isaacson, to get back to the question about making college more affordable, especially here in the 24th District, UC Santa Barbara, Cal Poly, what would you do?
When I got my undergraduate degree, I went to Cal Poly, and I don't think there were any tuition in those days. There were plenty of other fees, but there was no tuition, certainly. I think tuition-free college would be great. The problem I find with it is I don't know where the money would come from to make them tuition free. It does cost a lot to run a university. Some of the money comes in from research grants to the universities. But the real lack comes from the state. The state used to fund the universities, the state system of universities, to a very large degree, and they've stopped funding them. The money is being diverted someplace else. If we can divert the money back, then that's great. The federal government could possibly chip in some, but as I say, we do have some physical problems coming up, so I don't know where it would come from. The best I could do is the loans are helping students go to the universities now. Finding ways for loan forgiveness is probably the best bet to make it ultimately tuition-free.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to special live debate coverage for the 24th Congressional District at KCRW Santa Barbara. We're live with three candidates, Democrat Benjamin Lucas, Independent Steve Isaacson, and Republican Matt Kokin. I'd like to move on to another subject now. This is a question for all the candidates. The United States and its European allies are facing increasing threats from ISIS. The attacks have even reached close to home with the San Bernardino shooting. And of course, there were the shootings in Brussels and Paris. President Obama said that he would send 250 troops to Syria to prevent the spread of ISIS. Do you support the president's decision to send troops abroad to fight terrorism right now? Benjamin Lucas.
I actually spoke through to my uncle, who's a two-star general and actually the commandant of California and had ran the reserves and the Western Hemisphere for quite a while. He stepped down about 5 years ago. He thinks we're being throttled back like we are in Syria, like we were in Vietnam. We're prepared to do 1,000 sorties a day. We're doing 10 sorties a day, and they're just, if you're fired upon, fire back. It's the same rules of engagement that we've gone into in Vietnam. It's turning into the same situation over there. I believe that we should go in and take care of ISIS and put ground troops in. I support ground troops going into Syria. I support them going back into Iraq and that area, and I think we have to take care of this situation fast and furious, and that's what we should do.
Mr. Kokkonen, do you support troops to be sent abroad to fight ISIS?
First of all, I've served in the military myself. In fact, before I was a U.S. citizen, I served in the National Guard. My daughter is currently a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and so I have some familiarity and feelings towards the military. I respect them greatly, and we need to give them all the support we can, including making sure that they're funded adequately and what have you. For us to send 250 people there, that is, to me, that's kind of laughable. It's just a statement that the president is saying, well, I'm worried about it, I'm concerned about it. No, that's a joke. I would listen to the generals. If the generals say that if they give us a hard number of soldiers we need to send there, then we would do that. I would support that. I'm not anxious to go there because I have a child who's my daughter is in the reserves at this time, even fact. But if that's the best thing to do, then absolutely I would. We need to also support the Kurds. We need to support them fully and not hold back on on all of the ammunitions and weapons and what have you. They're good soldiers. They know what they're doing. We also can establish a safe zone there in Iraq and Syria for the people that are there, and that's one way of making sure that we don't have too many people going or becoming refugees and taking over Europe.
Steve Isaacson, the question of sending troops, specifically President Obama saying he'd like to send 250 troops to Syria to fight ISIS. Do you agree?
We have the greatest military in the world, in my opinion. But we cannot police everything around the world. ISIS is threatening us. We have a right to defend ourselves against ISIS. I think it's very smart to only send 250 troops or some small number to work with the locals, work with the Kurds, the Syria, the Iraqi army, and what have you, to combat ISIS. We need to enlist our allies, and they would be allies in that case, in putting down other groups rather than doing it all ourselves. That just usually makes the other countries angry anyway in the long run. It doesn't do that much good for our long-term political process. So, yes, I support sending them over because I believe their principal intent is not to fight the war themselves, but to work with the local armies and such to put down ISIS, because we do need to bring ISIS to a close.
All right, thank you. We're now going to move to closing statements. There'll be 60 seconds each. Benjamin Lucas.
I'd like to thank KCRW for extending the invitation beyond the first five original tier members. And I hope our questions, I mean the answers to the questions, the audience enjoyed and understood. I appreciate my fellow competitors here for the seat. I think we had a really nice debate tonight, forum. I think you did a wonderful job as a moderator. If you want to look me up out there on the internet, just Google Benjamin Lucas. Like I said, cross-reference me with almost anything, and you can look up my history. But as for my platform, go to thelucassolution.com. I have a comprehensive package put together answering most of these questions in detail, and you can look it up. We're also having a forum at San Marcos High School, 3 hours, on the 19th, next Thursday. I invite everybody to come join us there. It's going to be 3 hours of debate, all nine candidates, and then there's a live broadcast on Channel 3, Channel 12, on Saturday at 7 o'clock. I hope everybody tunes into that. Thank you.
That's Democrat Benjamin Lucas. Thank you. Steve Isaacson, Independent.
Thank you for all for listening. Thank you, KCRW. Thank you, the individuals in front of me, for doing this. I've got a request for the public out there, though. I want you to all, you've heard from us three tonight, you've heard from the five last week. Listen to what they've said. Think about it. Look at their websites. Look at their donor list from their financial disclosures, both congressional financial disclosures and the FEC financial disclosures. See who anybody is obligated to. Think about how well they will represent you as opposed to their donors or something else. And then vote for who you think's right. Normally I say just vote for me at this point anyway, but vote for whoever you think is right.
Thank you. That's Independent Steve Isaacson. And finally, Matt Kokkonen, running as the Republican, the lone Republican at our table today.
Thank you. Very much appreciate the venue that you provided here and the personnel. It's wonderful. And thank you to all the listeners for listening to us. As I mentioned, I was born in Finland, and I came here legally at the age of 16 by myself. Went to Westmont College here, majored in philosophy, went back to Europe and did graduate studies in that. I have two master's degrees in finance-related fields because I've been a financial planner for my career, my whole career. And I have some very specific things that I want to mention. I say that we have to stop the illegal invasion, because why do illegals get freebies but our citizens have to pay for these services? And then I say, fight radical Islam. Why should we lose our freedom of speech and religion to jihadist murderers? Stop borrowing money. Why should we and our children have to pay off the immoral $19 trillion debt? And on education, I say we have to get rid of Common Core, because the education should be that, not a social experiment. And we need to stop funding sanctuary cities. Thank you.
Okay. We'll have to end it there. A final thank you to the candidates tonight, Benjamin Lucas, Steve Isaacson, Matt Kokkonen, and thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
You can see the full list of candidates and their positions on a number of topics at kcrw.com/Santa Barbara. We'll now take a short break, and when we return, we'll wrap up our coverage with political journalist Jerry Roberts, who's been covering the race for California's 24th congressional district. I'm Jonathan Bastian. This is KCRW. And welcome back. This is KCRW. I'm Jonathan Bastian, and this is our coverage for the race for California's 24th congressional district. Last Friday, we heard from five candidates in the race, and tonight we heard from Benjamin Lucas, Steve Isaacson, and Matt Kokkonen. Now, to help make sense of everything we heard over this past week and to look ahead to the June 7th primary, I'm now joined by political writer Jerry Roberts, co-founder of CalBuzz and former managing editor at the San Francisco Chronicle. Jerry, good to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's been a lot going on this last week, especially here at KCRW. And I want to get your thoughts, at least first, to what you heard in the last 50 minutes from some of these candidates.
Well, I thought thematically and also as a matter of style, they were much clearer and much more straightforward about stating their positions. And I thought much more responsive directly to your questions. than we heard last Friday, where we had sort of more professional politicians who were a little bit murkier. And then I thought the thing that really jumped out was the debate on the issue of immigration, where you really had very different clear stands. Matt Kekkonen against what he called the illegal invasion, wanting to deport people, supporting Trump's wall, supporting the ban on Muslims, Islam, and then Steve Isaacson, the Independent, and Benjamin Lucas, I thought more, they didn't directly say a path to citizenship, but there was certainly a path to some official status here. And Lucas particularly, I thought, was very specific on how that would work. He continually talked about his practical side of as a problem solver.
Yeah. Well, of course, the issue of Donald Trump, immigration, is just everybody's thinking about it. Everybody's talking about it. And if we think about last Friday as well, this question came up. It was posed to Justin Fried and Katya Wishajian. And we asked Justin Fried exactly about this. And I asked him if he would support Donald Trump for president. And this is what he told me.
So I will work with any president who is holding that office that is elected by the people.
So
and
if
the
it's Donald Trump, you will actively support him.
I'm not sure what that means, actively
would
support.
Would you campaign for him? Would you tell your constituents to vote for him?
I'm campaigning to represent the people of the Central Coast. Will I vote for him? Time will tell.
Wouldn't really give me too good of an answer, would he?
No, which really kind of surprised me. He really wiggled around. Cacho at least came out and said, yeah, I'll support the nominee and I'll, you know, try to educate Trump. You know, Justin just wouldn't do it. And the audience reacted to that. I thought he got some boos and hisses about that. And I didn't quite understand. I mean, maybe he was looking for guidance to Washington, where Speaker Paul Ryan met this week with Trump and kind of, you know, said we agree on the big things and not the small things. But I just I thought that was really his worst moment in the debate. Overall, he has a pretty forceful presentation, but that just made him look weak.
What do you think a Republican gains right now by supporting Trump? If you were running, let's say, as a Republican, would you want to be clear on the subject or not?
I think I would want to be clear, yes. And in this district particularly, I don't think that you gain a great deal. I think there is a fair conservative base, but I think a lot of Republicans in this district are more moderate and I think probably scared or offended by some of Trump's statements about women. I think, again, you know, women are going to be a crucial cohort in this election, and particularly I think moderate Republican women, even pro-choice Republican women. So I think that's definitely where Hillary Clinton's going after him, and I think it would not hurt, I don't think, a Republican here with the voters to say I'm against Trump. What it will hurt is the Washington insiders, who are the ones who are going to decide whether they get money or not.
Yeah, and again, this issue of pro-choice kind of came up also in the last debate with Katya Wishajian, if you remember. And I asked, I said, would you support to defund Planned Parenthood, for example? And do you remember his answer? He said, there's a video I need to see first. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, this famous undercover videos that were made by anti-abortion groups under, some suspicious circumstances. They're being investigated here in California by the Attorney General. I thought that was a very poor answer on his part. I mean, to a large extent, that issue has been litigated. Many Republicans, right-wing Republicans, say, oh, yeah, it's absolutely true. I think Democrats and people in the middle have looked at it and say, wait a minute, you know, this looks like a setup to a large extent. In any case, to say at this point, I need to look at the video months after it's been out there. There's been tremendous debate, conversation about it. I just kind of think it made him in part look like he was ducking the issue, but even more importantly, like he was ill-informed about it and wasn't really up to speed.
Let's talk about some of the Democrats last week. Some think Salud Carbajal is the front runner right now on the Democratic side. And there's a question that I've heard you ask him many times, which is, give me one example in which you differ from the policies of Lois Capps. And it's interesting. I feel like he hadn't answered that question throughout the campaign, but he did give a response last Friday.
Yeah, he was ready for that one. But I
remember he had to look at his notes. Yeah, I remember,
I was glad to hear that you asked him and you finally got an answer out of him. I
I think we have some tape of Salud Carbajal saying that. Let's take a listen.
One thing that I would disagree with, that I would have voted differently and disagree with Congresswoman Capps, was the 2008 bank bailout, which I think was short-sighted overall. It was a giveaway to the banks. We were certainly enduring a crisis, but there was very little transparency. And I think the bailout was unfortunate. And I would have voted differently than Congresswoman Capps.
Jerry Roberts, is that just kind of a really safe answer now for a Democrat to give?
It's absolutely a safe answer, and particularly if you're trying to, reach across the aisle and get some Republican votes. And, I think if he had said, with the benefit of hindsight and all we know now, I would have voted differently. But I think at the time, certainly the Democrats were unified on this. The Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, was in favor of it. I just think that would have been a real tough vote.
Well, I think somebody that surprised a lot of folks last Friday was William Ostrander, who's been making some noise out there. And he talked a lot about farming and water. Let's take a listen to something he said last Friday.
I'm a farmer, and none of these people know what they're talking about. No, Mr. Farid, not 50% of my water goes into the ocean off my ranch. I promise you that. There are many, many, many ways that we can do that actually improve the amount of water that we collect without building damaging reservoirs. We need to stop tilling everything. If we offered in the farm bill grass cover crops and other types of cover crops that allow water to perforate and get down into our aquifers,
okay,
we wouldn't be in such a mess.
And here again, he's speaking really from the position of a farmer, which he has some authority on. Did he convince you in his plans for water and farming and all of that?
Well, I thought he was the only one that really answered the question that, mm-hmm. that you asked, and I thought that that was kind of a new take that we hadn't heard in the campaign before, where he was very specific about some things that could be done, would also benefit climate change. Whether those are good policies or bad policies, I don't pretend to know, but I thought he sounded very knowledgeable and was very specific. And again, he's the most direct guy. He's the most energetic
right.
guy. He's laid out, the clearest, I think, platform, and kind of he agrees with Bernie Sanders on a lot of things. And he certainly has the most dramatic presentation. So what he doesn't have
right.
is any money, and yeah. So it's going to be hard to get that message out.
Well, one last question is Helene Schneider, the mayor of Santa Barbara, and it's hard to tell how she's fitting into this, if she could take Salud Carbajal down in the primary or not. How did you feel about her performance last Friday?
Well, I think, she and Salud both have the same message, which is I'm going to work across the aisle, I'm a problem solver, and I don't think there's room for two candidates in that space. I think she should run more to the left, but if I knew anything, I'd make a lot of money as a political consultant.
Well, Jerry Roberts, we always appreciate you swinging by KCRW. Thank you so much. And that concludes our live debate and political coverage of the race for California's 24th congressional district. You can learn more about all the candidates online at kcrw.com/Santa Barbara. Tonight's broadcast was produced by Catherine Barnes and engineered by Phil Richards and Jason Grohman. You're listening to member-supported KCRW on the air at 88.7 KDRW Santa Barbara. We are Music, Culture, News, a community service of Santa Monica College and NPR for Southern California. We'll now head to Friday Night Music with Garth Trinidad. Again, I'm Jonathan Bastian. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.